Welcome to the deep dive.
Oh.
Okay, so the luxury watch market over the last, what, 5 years? It's been nothing short of a roller coaster, right?
Absolutely, a real roller coaster. We saw those just the dizzying highs back in early 2022.
And then boom, a pretty significant slump by the end of that same year. It was fast.
Really fast. It's definitely left a lot of people scratching their heads, wondering what's coming next.
Exactly. So for you listening, maybe you're an investor, a collector, or maybe you're just really curious. The big question for 2025 seems pretty stark.
Yeah, is it time to buy the dip?
Or is it maybe time to dip out altogether? That's what we want to unpack today.
Right, cut through some of the noise.
Yeah, let's dig into the latest market analysis, figure out the key forces really shaping things, and explore what it all means for you. Let's get into it.
Sounds good. It's definitely a critical moment. And that volatility you mentioned, it highlights how much things have shifted and shifted so quickly.
It really does.
Yeah.
So, to figure out where we might be heading, let's maybe start with the basics. Like, how big is this market globally right now? And what are the long-term forecasts looking like? Is it still a major industry despite, all the recent turbulence?
Oh, it certainly is. Globally, we're talking about a market valued at roughly $50 billion right now.
50 billion. Okay.
And yeah, despite those ups and downs we talked about, experts are actually forecasting a pretty healthy compound annual growth rate, the CAGR.
Almost 5%.
Wow, 5% CAGR. So where does that take it?
Well, the projections suggest it could reach nearly $75 billion by 2032. So, yeah, that's a strong forecast. It points to some real underlying resilience, I think.
That is pretty substantial for the overall market. But what's actually driving that growth, especially when, we heard so much about declines recently?
Well, one of the biggest drivers, and it often surprises people, is the secondary market, the pre-owned luxury watch market.
Right, where the rare stuff and the vintage pieces get traded. Exactly. Now, it's currently about half the size of the primary market, the market for brand new watches,
Okay.
but it's growing incredibly fast. Luf's Consult, they're a Swiss advisory firm. They actually predict this secondary market could hit almost $80 billion by 2033.
Wait, $80 billion? That would mean.
It could potentially surpass the primary market for new watches. Yeah.
Wow. So the market for used watches essentially could be bigger than for new ones. That's a huge shift, isn't it?
It's a massive potential shift in, consumer behavior and just the whole market structure. And, Lux Consult also pointed to a bit of a sluggish 2023, but then they forecast this big leap, like 10% growth during 2025. So there's optimism there.
Okay, optimism for 2025. But let's not completely forget the recent past, those headlines that caused a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
I remember late last year, Joseph Wilkins in Business Insider, he came out pretty strong, declaring the great Rolex recession is here.
He did, yes. And look, at the time, the numbers seemed to back up a pretty gloomy picture. You had the Watch Charts Market Index showing that significant 37% drop from the peak in March 2022.
Yeah, that's steep.
And Rolex specifically was down, what, 31% over that same period? But here's the crucial thing now. Since those headlines came out, the market has actually, largely stabilized.
Stabilized, okay. So not falling further necessarily.
Right. We're kind of heading into 2025. Almost on a knife edge, you could say. Lots of people wondering, have we actually hit the bottom yet?
Which leads us right to the core question. What are the forces driving things now? What's behind this stabilization or this delicate balance?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Or perhaps the $50,000 watch question.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with a big one, interest rates. Central banks everywhere have been hiking rates to fight inflation. How did that ripple through to luxury watches?
Well, those hikes made getting credit harder and definitely more expensive. And for luxury items, especially in that pre-owned sector we talked about, it directly cools demand.
Right. Less easy money sloshing around.
Exactly. When borrowing costs go up, people tend to pull back on that kind of discretionary spending. High-value, non-essential items, they're often the first things affected. It's sort of classic economics, really.
Makes sense. Okay, and speaking of big market shifts, let's talk crypto. That market is famously volatile. Yeah, the whole crypto winter, things like the Terra Luna collapse, lots of fraud concerns. What did that do to the watch market?
Ah, the crypto connection. It's actually quite direct. Chrono 24 reported seeing a big surge in supply hitting the luxury watch market during that crypto collapse.
So people were selling watches to cover crypto losses.
Precisely. You had investors who'd maybe bought fancy watches with earlier crypto gains suddenly needing cash. So they liquidated those watch assets. It basically flooded the market with high-end pieces right when confidence was already a bit shaky.
But hang on, the crypto story has flipped again recently, hasn't it? I mean, Bitcoin's back near its old highs.
It has, yeah. The market's close to that November 2021 peak, around $64,000.
So what does a crypto rebound mean for watches then? Less selling pressure.
Potentially, yes. It suggests a possible shift in those supply dynamics. If folks who bought watches with crypto profits are seeing their portfolios recover or even grow again, well, that urgent need to sell off the watch disappears, doesn't it?
Right, they can hold on to it.
Exactly. So that could definitely ease the supply pressure on the secondary market and, you know, maybe even stimulate some demand again if newly re-enriched crypto investors feel like celebrating.
Interesting. Okay, so beyond rates in crypto, another huge factor has got to be the actual supply dynamics stemming from COVID.
Oh, absolutely. You had stay-at-home orders hitting factory output, massive supply chain knots hurting raw material flow.
And at the same time, weirdly, people had more disposable income stimulus checks, no travel spending.
Yeah, it was this really unique mix. Investor appetite for luxury goods, including watches, actually soared. People started seeing them more as a tangible asset.
So production slows down, demand goes up.
Yeah.
Leading to those crazy waiting lists for new watches.
Exactly. And here's the fascinating part. Even with the market downturn we've discussed, a lot of pre-owned models are still trading above their original retail price.
Still, even now.
Yes, which tells you there's still solid underlying demand there. You know, it persists, even with the bearish headlines, and it points to continued scarcity for certain desirable models.
Okay, that's a key point about underlying strength. And speaking of strength, let's look at who's making big moves. Are major players still confident? I'm thinking of the 1916 Group.
Yeah.
It's the company behind Watchbox, right? Backed by Michael Jordan, Bill Ackman.
That's them. Big names. They had $400 million in sales back in 2022, and late last year, they went on a buying spree, acquired Goldberg, Hyde Park Jewelers, Radcliffe Jewelers.
And integrated them into the Rolex Certified Pre-Owned program, too, I believe.
They did. And look, these aren't just headlines. These are massive investments. They signal significant long-term confidence, especially in that secondary market.
So the big money still sees value there.
Absolutely. It's a powerful vote of confidence from the people with deep pockets and long-term strategies. They clearly see fundamental, enduring value despite the short-term bumps.
And it wasn't just corporate groups, was it? Cristiano Ronaldo got involved too.
Right. The football superstar, he apparently has a pretty hefty watch collection himself, maybe $10 million worth. He invested in Chrono 24 back in July 2024.
Chrono 24, the big online marketplace.
Exactly. We don't know the exact amount, but it was described as substantial. Again, it just underscores that belief in the future of the secondary market.
Okay, so big money's moving in. What about the buyers themselves? Are things changing there? I saw a Deloitte report forecasting like 75% market growth by 2030, driven a lot by shifting buyer demographics, younger people.
Yes, this is a really crucial shift. Millennials and Gen Z are having a huge impact, and their motivations seem a bit different.
How so?
Well, they're increasingly drawn to things like sustainability, this idea of a circular economy, and ethical manufacturing matters more to them.
So it's not just about the bling?
Not entirely, no. I mean, price matters, of course. But for luxury watches, these younger generations seem attracted to something, well, deeper perhaps. The authenticity, the history, the sheer permanence of a well-made watch in a world that feels increasingly digital and temporary.
That's a really interesting point. Like an anchor to something real.
Sort of, yeah. It's about more than just status for many of them. And the data backs this up pretty strongly.
What does the data show?
Well, one stat is that millennials are apparently 4 times more likely to buy a pre-owned watch than baby boomers are.
4 times, wow.
Yeah. And Phillips Auctioneers reported that the number of registered bidders, the paddles at their watch auctions, jumped 70% between 2019 and 2023.
70% increase in bidders.
And get this. The average age of those buyers dropped from 57 down to 50.
So definitely younger buyers coming in. That's not a small shift. That feels like a real generational wave.
It really does. And just a point of clarification here. When we talk about this booming secondary market, it's not just watches that have been worn for years, you know, traditional pre-owned.
Right. What else does it include?
It also includes brand new, unworn watches, and even watches that have been flipped, bought from an authorized dealer, and then immediately resold, sometimes still in the box, never worn.
Ah, okay. So secondary covers a wider range than just used. That's important.
It's a vital distinction for understanding what's actually in the market's inventory and why it appeals to different buyers.
Got it. And with these new buyers, these different motivations, are we seeing tastes change too?
Yeah.
For ages, it felt like it was all about steel sports watches from, you know, the big three or four brands.
Tastes are definitely broadening out. Yes. Look, the classics from Rolex, Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe, they'll always be hugely important, right? They hold a value.
Sure.
But we are seeing more interest now in, say, smaller watch sizes, pieces with Art Deco influences, even watches from non-Swiss brands.
Really? What's driving value then, if not just the big brand name?
Things like rarity, proven provenance, the watch's history, and just having a great story behind a particular piece. Those are becoming a much stronger value driver. It's about uniqueness, the narrative.
Interesting. More diversity in what people appreciate.
Yep.
And maybe related to that, what about the new watches coming out? I saw Eric Ku, founder of Loop This, predicted 2025 might be kind of muted for new releases.
Yeah, his take was that the premium watchmakers might focus more on sort of slight tweaks to existing classics, you know, a new dial color here, a different case material there.
Rather than totally new, groundbreaking designs.
Exactly. And if that prediction holds true, well, it could actually create a really big opportunity for the secondary market.
How so?
Well, if the brand new stuff isn't offering those really exciting, innovative pieces that grab collectors' attention, where do those collectors look?
To the past, I guess. To older models.
Precisely. They'll turn to the secondary market to find those remarkable, unique pieces from previous years, especially ones with that great story or provenance we just talked about. It could really push demand for vintage and rare pre-owned items.
Okay, so even with all this talk of a bear market feeling or a correction, there's still this underlying strength, particularly for desirable pieces. You mentioned models still selling above retail.
Yes, that Morgan Stanley and Watch Chart report really highlighted this. Even though prices for Rolex, AP, and Patek did fall from those crazy peaks, a big chunk of their models are still selling above the original retail price.
What were the numbers again?
It was something like 68% of Rolex models looked at, 66% for AP, and 48% for Patek Philippe models were still above retail.
That's pretty significant value retention, isn't it? Even after a drop.
It's crucial. It tells us the froth from 2021-2022 might be gone, that easy flipper market where you could buy and instantly resell for profit. Mm. That's mostly over.
Right, except maybe for weightless slips.
Except for maybe those, yeah. But the core value of these top-tier watches hasn't just evaporated. People who own them understand their value, and they aren't panic selling, even with more inventory around.
So zoomed out, the market is still actually up compared to, say, early 2021 levels.
In many cases, yes, which suggests that maybe, just maybe, now isn't a terrible entry point for new investors who plan to hold long term.
Okay, let's widen the lens a bit now to the global economy. China has always been such a huge player in luxury goods. What's the situation there?
Yeah, China's role is massive. If you look at the Swiss Watch Industry Federation data from early 2025, the U.S. is the single biggest market, sure, but China and Hong Kong combined actually import more Swiss watches.
So China's economic health really matters, and there have been some worries about its recovery.
There have, definitely. People point to things like the lingering effects of the zero COVID policies, the big troubles in their property market, weakening internal demand, all potentially slowing things down.
So is the whole watch market recovery dependent on China getting back on track?
Well, it's important, no doubt, but it's probably not the only factor. We need a balanced view. China is significant, but it isn't the sole engine anymore.
What else is happening in Asia?
We're seeing good signs elsewhere. Singapore's market has shown decent growth. And then you have India with its rising middle class, really boosting sales for brands like Omega and Breitling, maybe by 20-30% for some.
Okay, so it's a more diversified picture than just all eyes on China.
Exactly. China matters, but the market's future isn't solely tied to its recovery path.
All right, so bringing all these threads together, we heard terms like great Rolex recession, but given everything we've discussed, the stabilization, the underlying demand, the secondary market boom, is recession really the right word, or was it more of a correction?
I think correction feels much more accurate looking at the data now. If you look at, say, the five-year average price for something like the Rolex 50 Index from WristCheck, it tells a different story than just focusing on that sharp drop from the absolute peak in 2022.
So don't just look at the peak to the trough.
Right. Many might feel a bit down about the value lost from those, frankly, unsustainable highs. But if you zoom out, it really looks like the market was just correcting from what you called frothy highs.
And those highs were driven by that unique COVID situation.
Exactly, that perfect storm.
Right.
Less production, more cash floating around from stimulus and lack of travel, and watches suddenly gaining real traction as an investment class. It was unusual.
So the current market isn't really a collapse, more like settling into a period of slower growth. Or maybe stagnation for a bit.
That seems to be the consensus, yeah. More moderate growth or stabilization. Which means, you know, there are solid reasons to actually hold on to these watches, to see this as a recalibration, not a crash.
Okay, so if it's a recalibrated market, let's think about the owner. You have a luxury watch, and maybe you need some cash in 2025. What's the smart play? Selling it. Or something else.
Well, this brings us to an interesting perspective from David Sonnenthal. He's the director at New Bond Street Pawnbrokers.
Ah, pawnbroking.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the first thing people think of with luxury watches.
Maybe not, but his point is that these watches are financial assets. They're also art, mechanical marvels, pieces of history, and they tend to hold value well even when the economy gets rocky.
So what's his argument against just selling it? If you need funds.
His main argument, especially for 2025, centers on pawning versus selling. And there are a few key reasons. First, the market situation we just discussed.
Right. Prices are down from the peak, but seem to have stabilized.
Exactly. Many think we might be at or near the bottom of this cycle. So selling now, in what's still arguably a suppressed market, could mean you miss out on future gains if prices recover. You might really regret it later.
Whereas pawning lets you get cash without selling the watch itself.
Precisely. You access liquidity, you get the cash you need, but you retain ownership. You keep the asset, and you still stand to benefit if the market appreciates later on. You're leveraging it, not losing it.
Which leads to the second point, I imagine the emotional side.
Absolutely. That's his second key reason. Watches often have huge sentimental value, don't they? Gifts, inheritances, marking a major life event. They're personal.
Very true.
Pawning allows you to keep hold of those cherished items. You get the financial help without that permanent separation.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about the practicalities? Is selling a high-end watch easy right now?
It can be tricky. Selling privately or through consignment in a slower market can take time. There's uncertainty about the price you'll get, and then there are commissions that eat into your return.
Right. So how does pawning compare process-wise?
Well, David Sonnenthal highlights that pawning, especially through a reputable high-end place like his, is usually much more straightforward. It's typically discreet, it's quick, you can often get funds very rapidly.
So faster access to cash.
Much faster. And then, crucially, when your finances improve, you just pay back the loan plus interest and you get your watch back.
Right.
Which by then might even be worth more. It offers speed and flexibility without that finality of selling.
And David Sonnenthal, he knows his stuff, right? He's got quite the background.
Oh, yeah. He's a well-respected figure. An award-winning pawnbroker. You might have even seen him as a resident dealer on that Channel 4 show, Four Rooms. He definitely has an eye for value and expertise in these kinds of assets.
Okay. So wrapping up this deep dive then, the big picture seems to be that luxury watches, despite the recent turbulence, are still seen as remarkably durable assets.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The market's probably best viewed as having gone through a necessary correction from those slightly crazy 2022 highs, rather than being in some kind of sustained collapse.
In the fundamental appeal, the craftsmanship, the history, the allure, that's still very much alive.
It seems so. It's still driving significant interest and activity, especially with those evolving buyer demographics and the strength of the secondary market.
So we've covered a ton today, crypto's impact, supply issues, changing buyers, the China question, even pawning strategies. As you listening reflect on all this, maybe keep queuing on some of those big questions we raised.
Like, how will that crypto bull run really play out for watch supply and demand this year? Is the market's fate truly tied just to China's recovery, or are other regions going to pick up more slack?
And the big one, if interest rates do get cut later in 2025, as many expect, will that actually translate into significantly higher watch prices across the board? Or will it be more nuanced?
Lots to watch, no pun intended.
Huh, indeed. And maybe one final thought to leave you with. In a world that seems obsessed with the next new thing, always chasing the future, What do the enduring quality, the history, the sheer permanence of a luxury watch really mean? What does it represent for you? Something to think about. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.